come you masters of war. You that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind discs.
I just don't want you. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is John Mearsheimer, Professor of Political Science and the co-director of the Program on International Security Policy at the University of Chicago. His books include The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, the bestseller The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, and his latest, Why Leaders Lie, The Truth About Lying in International Politics. He was one of 33 foreign policy scholars who signed a letter in the New York Times warning of the disastrous consequences of a war with Iraq 6 months before it began. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Mearsheimer.
Thank you, Ian.
And, you know, when I read what you and your 32 other fellow foreign policy international relations experts wrote in the op-ed that was published on the op-ed page of the New York Times 6 months before the Iraq War began, at a time of war fever and with the administration figures like Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice talking about the smoking gun being a mushroom cloud, I'm inclined to read it quickly, if you don't mind. These are the points that you made. Saddam Hussein is a murderous despot, but no one has provided credible evidence that Iraq is cooperating with al-Qaeda. Even if Saddam Hussein acquired nuclear weapons, he could not use them without suffering massive U.S. or Israeli retaliation. The first Bush administration did not try to conquer Iraq in 1991 because it understood that doing so could spread instability in the Middle East, threatening U.S. interests. This remains a valid concern today. The United States would win a war with Iraq, but Iraq has military options, chemical and biological weapons, urban combat that might impose significant costs on the invading forces and neighboring states. Even if we win easily, we will have no plausible exit strategy. Iraq is a deeply divided society that the United States would have to occupy and police for many years to create a viable state. Al-Qaeda poses a greater threat to the U.S. than does Iraq. War with Iraq will jeopardize the campaign against Al-Qaeda by diverting resources and attention from the campaign and by increasing anti-Americanism around the globe. Boy, talk about being prescient. I mean, that is almost chapter and verse what happened in terms of the disaster.
Well, I think, Ian, and I said this at the time, that it was quite easy to foresee that outcome. I found it remarkable that so many people who were products of the Vietnam War were willing to invade a country in the third world, a country with a rich history of colonialism, without even thinking that maybe things would go badly. What was remarkable about the Bush administration and those people on the outside who supported the war was how unequivocally optimistic they were about the outcome. Anybody who studied war knows that anytime you initiate a war, you can never be certain what the outcome will be. And when you go into a country like Iraq or you go into a country like Afghanistan, you should be especially wary that things will go south very quickly. But that was not how most people inside the Beltway thought about this one. They were very confident that this was going to be a quick and decisive victory, and then we would be on to the next country. I thought this was remarkably foolish at the time. But nevertheless, it was just the way most Americans were thinking.
Well, what I find extraordinary, though, John Mearsheimer, is that the warning that you and 32 other foreign policy scholars here in the United States offered to the American public via the pages of the New York Times went unheeded. At the same time, those same very pages of the New York Times, the op-ed page, Tom Friedman was shilling for the administration. And I spoke to one of the few people who knew about Iraq, Bob Baer, the CIA officer, and he said in retrospect he blames Tom Friedman as much as anybody for that war because he brought the liberals on and said it was okay for them to support the war.
Yeah, I think the New York Times ran three different op-eds by Kenneth Pollack, who made the liberal case for war, and many liberals said at the time convinced them that the war made eminently good sense. But there was no question that the Times, although it occasionally raised doubts about the case for the war, basically was on the bandwagon. And certainly newspapers like the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post were helping to lead the charge. The fact is, we have here in the United States a mainstream media that is really incapable of doing serious work when it comes to foreign policy. The idea that the mainstream media would challenge any administration in a meaningful way is just not in the cards these days. And that was certainly true in the run-up to the Iraq War. And by the way, you see it today in the discussions about Iranian nuclear weapons. It's almost laughable how foolish our discourse in the mainstream media is about Iranian nuclear weapons.
You just mentioned, John, some of the Republicans opposed the war as well. Prominent among them was Dick Armey, who was a senior Republican in the House. And Dick Cheney went to him personally and lied through his teeth about what Saddam had in terms of weapons of mass destruction. And that's how he signed on to the war. This is all made clear in this extraordinary documentary about Dick Cheney, The World According to Dick Cheney on Showtime.
Yeah. Another prominent Republican who opposed the war was Brent Scowcroft. And the administration, in particular Condoleezza Rice, who was then the National Security Advisor, leaned very heavily on Scowcroft to keep his mouth closed after he wrote a op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in late 2002. Questioning the idea of going to war against Iraq. So lots of pressure was brought to bear on anyone who opposed to war not to speak loudly and clearly. I actually know a number of people who were opposed to the war but did not speak out because they thought that they would lose their credibility inside the Beltway. And this is one of the main reasons why there appeared to be so much unanimity in Washington at the time for fighting against Saddam.
So what does this say about American foreign policy, our understanding of facts versus fiction? Shouldn't we reward people who get things right and punish people who get things wrong? The idea that the Obama administration has hired all of the foreign policy experts who got it wrong, the idea that the neocons are still out there and unrepentant and talked to seriously in the press, I find it extraordinary. The people like yourself who got it right are not listened to, but the people who got it wrong are blithely soldiering on.
And helping to create all sorts of false images about Iran this time and pushing a war against Iran just as they were pushing a war against Iraq 10 years ago. Look, the fact is, Ian, there's hardly any accountability in the American system. You can be catastrophically wrong and you pay no price. And you are then free to go on and make more specious arguments about the need for more unnecessary wars. This is just how the United States works these days. Or maybe I should say it's how the United States doesn't work these days, because it's quite clear that our political system is broken. And when it comes to making foreign policy, we're just not doing very well at all.
So what then is going on this 10th anniversary? Are we seriously having second thoughts? I mean, you'd have to be blind not to notice what a disaster Iraq is. 60 people were killed there today by car bombs, etc. The only winner of the Iraq War was Iran. And now, of course, there'll be probably another Iraq war with the Assad's collapsing. And then that will ripple across Iraq and probably split the Sunnis and the Kurds off. And then you'll have an even another civil war, probably.
And I think you're missing one of the most important points. And that is that by invading Iraq in March 2003, we took our eye off the ball in Afghanistan. You want to remember that after we had defeated the Taliban in the latter part of 2001, the United States was in an excellent position in Afghanistan to work hard to create a stable regime in that country. But instead of concentrating on getting the job done in Afghanistan, what we did was take our eye off the ball and we invaded Iraq. And not only did we jump into a quagmire in Iraq, but then when things began to go south in Afghanistan, which of course happened because we were not there to work on fixing that situation, we were not in a position where we could go back to Afghanistan and fix it. So now we have a situation where the United States has lost in Iraq and is going to lose in Afghanistan. Two disastrous situations. So it's important, I think, to always remember that the decision to invade Iraq is inextricably bound up with subsequent events in Afghanistan. And that's not a happy story, of course.
Well, just in closing, John Mearsheimer, is there any possibility that in this soul searching that's going on now, as facile as it is, that there will be a moment of recognition of the monstrous folly that the Iraq war is and the price that the United States paid and continues to pay?
Well, I think some people recognize it. And I think the principal reason that the United States did not attack Iran last year and is probably not ever going to attack Iran, despite the fact that the Israeli government and the Israel lobby here in the United States is pushing us very hard to do just that, is because people realize that the last thing the United States needs is another war with a country in the Islamic world. So I think that the disasters in Afghanistan and Iraq have had a positive effect in regard to Iran, in that they have made President Obama and his lieutenants remarkably reluctant to start a war against Tehran. And I think that's all for the good. But nevertheless, a lot of the same people, especially the neoconservatives who pushed us into the war against Iraq, are working overtime to push us into a war against Iran, which would be another disaster for sure. And the Obama administration is filled with people who know this, which again is why they're so reluctant to do it. But nevertheless, the pressure is enormous. And as we said before, the press has just done a pathetic job of discussing the Iranian nuclear situation. And we have this crazy situation where, number one, most Americans think that the Iranians are on the verge of acquiring nuclear weapons, and that's their principal goal, when in fact the national intelligence estimates of 2007 and 2011 say that's not the case. And furthermore, most people seem to think that if Iran got nuclear weapons, that it could dominate the Middle East and coerce the United States to do all sorts of things it didn't want to do. And we have lots of theory and lots of history that shows us that's a ludicrous argument. But nevertheless, if you read the mainstream media, to include the New York Times and the Washington Post, that's not the picture you get. So things are in a pretty sad state when it comes to the mainstream media in the United States.
Well, John Mearsheimer, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with John Mearsheimer, professor of political science and co-director of the program on international security policy at the University of Chicago. His books include The Tragedy of Great Power Politics, the bestseller The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, and his latest, Why Leaders Lie, The Truth About Lying in International Politics. He was one of 33 foreign policy scholars who signed a letter in the New York Times warning of the disastrous consequences of a war with Iraq 6 months before it began. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back talking about how the build-up to the Iraq war is repeating itself with lies and distortions about Iran's nuclear program.